Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Tuesday, Donald Trump officially secured the Republican Party presidential nomination. At tonight's convention, he will officially accept the nomination. Over the past year, the media have given Donald Trump $2 billion worth of free advertising. This is according to SMG Delta. That's a firm that tracks TV ads. Donald Trump dominates just about every media outlet you can name. But what do you really know about Donald Trump beyond his promise to make America great again and contradictory comments on an array of very important issues? Today's guest, investigative journalist David K. Johnston, has covered Donald Trump for nearly 30 years. For his new book, The Making of Donald Trump, David draws on decades of interviews, financial records, court documents, and public statements. His book will be out on August 2nd. And David joins us from the studios of WXXI Public Broadcasting in Rochester, New York. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Well, good to be here, Rose.
Well, it's great to have you, David. I want to start off by asking you, a seasoned investigative journalist, a very serious journalist, what you think of the coverage of the conventions. I think that the coverage has been really bad. I mean, so many of the hosts are basically, they sound like moderators. They're not really giving us factual information about where these people stand, about the most extreme Republican platform we've ever seen. At a convention like this, what should we expect from the media?
Well, I think the journalists covering a convention, and I've never gone to a convention, it's not the kind of work that I do, but I think we should reasonably expect that they're going to provide context for what is said and explanations. Now, my column today at Investopedia, and it will go up either later today or tomorrow morning at the Daily Beast, is about Mike Pence and Donald Trump. I point out that the party of private enterprise now has as its two leaders two true blue corporate socialists. One of them, Donald Trump, one of the biggest welfare kings in America, and the other, a governor who cut off food stamps for adults who don't have children at a time when for every job available in the state of Indiana, there were five people or more looking for work. And he did this as he goes around constantly reminding us of his Christianity. And at the same time, he has given $829 million of taxpayer money to corporations. That is, he has had the state take from each family in that state more than $100 a year to give it to big companies. Nobody's talking about that. And the contradiction between his professed love of his fellow man and his conduct, which I show in the column by citing various scriptures, does not square with his claims.
He is being sold as someone who has a more moderate temper than Donald Trump. That's what we keep hearing in the media, but hardly any information about his policies. What explains this, David? I mean, I've been watching about 9 hours of convention coverage, and I haven't heard anything about his policies. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Well, part of the problem is that the news staffs have been so decimated. Journalist is just about, and it was a few years ago, the fastest disappearing white-collar job in America. I was back at the New York Times not too long ago, and you could have fired off a shotgun in the newsroom and not hit anybody. So there's a real problem in TV. The huge staffs that they used to have, where there would be briefing books and there would be all sorts of producers and other people whose job was to prepare detailed packages, just like they do for sports. You know, isn't it amazing when you're listening to, I don't listen to sports very much, but if something comes on, you know, they suddenly tell you these obscure facts because they've spent money to gather them. And the news organizations just don't have the money to do that, so they have gone to the cheap route. Let's cover what the politicians say and not so much what they have done.
Well, we're glad you're on because we're going to talk about real policies. And I want to ask you about an article that's getting a lot of attention in The New Yorker by Jane Mayer. You are quoted in this interview. Tony Schwartz was the ghostwriter for Donald Trump's book, The Art of the Deal. And he told Jane Mayer that he deeply regretted elevating Donald Trump's status. He says that Donald Trump is a liar. And Tony Schwartz was on Real Time with Bill Maher last night. He's doing a special from the convention. And I want to play a clip from Tony Schwartz. It's the first time that he's speaking out since he wrote this book. And here he is on Bill Maher.
This audience, it's the big lie of this campaign is that Trump cares about the people who are going to vote for him. He doesn't care about those people. He doesn't care about anyone.
You know him personally. You spent a lot of time.
I spent 18 months following this man around when I was a young man.
People say there's a different Trump. It seems to me like he's the same useless jackass off camera. But is there this other Trump?
There is no other Trump.
There is no other Trump.
There is no.
We have a witness who is.
Yeah. So there is no. There is no heart. There is no soul. If you Google the word sociopath, you'll get the first. List will be the 10 key qualities of a sociopath. That is a perfect description of Donald Trump. So I am here because Donald Trump has successfully muzzled now for 20, 25 years all of those people who know who he actually is. I want to be the person who is the exception because I started this book before.
And this
thank
book,
you.
By the way,
thank you. Look, let me just finish that thought, Joe. I started this book before he started building these incredible confidentiality agreements that did effectively muzzle people. So I'm out here to speak truth to power because nobody else is really doing it.
And he's suing you.
He's suing me. I knew he would sue me.
Join the club.
And that is Tony Schwartz. He was the ghostwriter for Donald Trump's wildly successful book. It's still in bookstores today called The Art of the Deal. And he told Jane Mayer of The New Yorker, now he's speaking to the media, that he regretted elevating Donald Trump's status. So according to Tony Schwartz, David, Donald Trump is a sociopath. He is a liar. What else do you think we need to know about Donald Trump? And what do you think about Tony Schwartz speaking out now?
Well, just disclosure point, Tony and I have the same literary agent,
okay.
Although I've never met him. His description of Donald, it's not the words I would use, but it is perfectly accurate. Donald, there's no there. I mean, when he formally became head of the Republican Party, what did he say in his speech the other night? He said, "I'll never forget this moment." There is no substance there. And in my book, and I'm constrained a lot about what I can say about it because we've sold serial rights and things that normally books don't get sold for anymore, I do point out things that show that he doesn't know anything. He calls himself a genius or an expert at this or that, but he's been questioned under oath about basic things, and he doesn't know the answers to them. And I cottoned to this right after I met him in June of 1988 that I saw him at that moment as a modern P.T. Barnum selling tickets to the Fiji Mermaid, with the difference that, you know, you paid a little bit of money and you knew you were in on the hoax. He was actually hurting people through his business practices. And at the recommendation of a couple of executives at other casinos who said to me, "Well, you know, Trump doesn't know anything about the casino business. He doesn't even know the games." I said something to him that was not true, a technique investigative reporters often use. And Donald, like a con artist, immediately incorporated my comment into his responses and went on down the path. That's what these psychics, you know, on TV do. They're advertised on TV. They pick up little signals when you say something and then run with them. And that's when I realized that Donald is entirely a con man. So I've written about him. I've interviewed him many times. He called me, by the way. I'm on the list, too. He called me April 27th to tell me he's going to sue me in all likelihood. And it was a standard Donald Trump call to my home. He's had my home number for many years. It was, "Hell, fellow, well met. Gathering information, what do you want?" When he already knew because he had it in writing. Romance, you know, often you write really good stuff that I like about me. Menacing, but if you write something I don't like, I'm going to sue you. I told him, you know, "You're a public figure, Donald. In America, the Supreme Court says that means I would have to write something knowing it was false and not caring, which no one's ever accused me of in the world. And he said, doesn't matter, I'll sue you anyway. And this is Donald. He is a bully. He has intimidated every news organization. I wrote a piece about Donald and all his ties to criminals, his lifelong ties, for Politico magazine a few months ago. And Politico put that thing through lawyering, the likes of which I have never been through in almost 50 years of this.
Wow.
Because everybody in the world is fearful. They know they won't lose a lawsuit, but they know they can spend an enormous amount of money fighting Donald.
All right. So you just wrote a book about Donald Trump. That Politico article was very, very long. You've written a number of articles, David, about real estate, about Trump not paying taxes, about Donald Trump and his kids named in a $250 million tax scam, about how Trump tried to cash in by dumping sewage into the Hudson River. This is just a couple of the pieces you've written about. There are three lawsuits against Trump University, accusations of sexual assault, so many things. We don't have time for all of them. So what do you think, at a time when so much of the coverage is so softball, what really stands out for you the most?
Oh, I think it's very clear. Donald doesn't know anything. He was asked by Hugh Hewitt, the very smart right-wing radio host, on one of the Republican debates, Mr. Trump, when it comes to our nuclear triad, given the constraints on the federal budget, you know, what would be your priorities? And Donald gives an answer that indicates he has no idea what the question is. He's given a follow-up. He does that again. Hewitt then says to Marco Rubio, same question to you. And Rubio says, well, let me first explain to Americans at home, the nuclear triad is the ability of the military of the United States to deliver nuclear weapons from submarines, from jet bombers, or from land-based missiles. It turns out Donald was asked this question by Hugh Hewitt on the radio 4 months earlier. He didn't go learn about it. And I have been saying everywhere I can, and I'll say it in your forum, boy, if they would get me as one of the questioners in a televised debate, I have three questions that are written down in a sealed envelope. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but if I ask them, I assure you that Donald's answers would reveal to everybody in the country that he knows nothing except Donald.
Hmm.
And I don't think he lives a very self-examined life either. I'm not sure that I'm probably doing offense here to Thoreau.
Well, and you also had a good piece that you wrote for National Memo, 21 Questions for Donald Trump, which were full of facts. I mean, you learn things about Donald here that you're not really learning in the media. And David, when you say that Donald Trump doesn't really know much, the New York Times reports that when his son, Donald Trump Jr., called John Kasich's advisors to ask Kasich to run for vice president, they told Kasich that he would run domestic and foreign policy. And when they asked his son, well, what's Donald going to do? He said, well, he's going to make America great again. So a lot of people are basically saying that Trump is going to bring in people who know what they're doing. He doesn't need to know. What are your thoughts about that?
The problem with that, Rose, is that Donald has a long and well-documented history of firing competent executives. He had his casinos being run by a first-rate executive who now runs Sheldon Adelson's, or did until recently, Sheldon Adelson's casinos in Macau, which are by far the most profitable in the world. And he got rid of him. Donald surrounds himself with people who are yes people. Yes, Donald. Of course, Donald. We'll do that, Donald. And he has this long record of business failures because he's not a good operator. By the way, you have to take my word for it. Fortune magazine looked at 496 major American companies with publicly traded stock, and it graded them on a series of metrics. How well did you make use of assets owned by the shareholders? The quality of your management? The turnover of your employees? Trump casinos came in either dead last or within two or three of the bottom in every single category.
Hmm.
And in Atlantic City, Donald's casinos are gone. But there are other casino companies, including his original partner, Harrah's, the old Holiday Inn motel chain, that are making good money in Atlantic City even today because they're competent business operators who know the business they're in and they know how to make a profit.
David K. Johnston is a longtime investigative journalist. He has covered Donald Trump for nearly 30 years. And his new book, The Making of Donald Trump, comes out on August 2nd. It is based on decades of interviews, financial records, court documents, and public statements. And if you'd like to join us, what do you want to know about Donald Trump? Over the last year, the media have given him $2 billion worth of free coverage. This is according to SMG. This is a firm that tracks TV advertising. I mean, I get emails every day from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and 90% of the articles are about Donald Trump. So we should all, if we read about these issues, we should know about this stuff, but I'm guessing most of us don't. So what questions do you have for David about Donald Trump, his business dealings, taxes, lawsuits, Trump University? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet at yourcallradio. David, what about taxes? You have written about Donald Trump's taxes. You write that in 1984, he listed no income on his tax form, yet deducted $626,000 as expenses. And, you know, taxes are a big deal during presidential campaigns, right? Where are Bernie's taxes? Where are Donald's taxes? Where are Hillary's taxes?
Well, Hillary's taxes were available all the way back to the 70s, the complete tax returns. Bernie has released 1 year's return, and I have been the person challenging him about not releasing them. He promised he would. I don't think he's ever going to do it. And we're never going to see Donald's returns, even if he's elected president. Donald, in 1978, reported negative income of a couple hundred thousand dollars. In 1979, negative $3.4 million. And Donald, I actually talked about this once at lunch, and I explained to him that he was being wasteful. You only have to have $1 of negative income to pay no taxes. And Donald was completely nonplussed. The journalist knew about tax law, which I now teach, even though I'm not a lawyer at Syracuse University's College of Law. And thanked me for my advice, but just in the, you know, being polite in doing that. We know that he paid no income taxes in 1984, 1992, 1994. I suspect he hasn't paid any taxes or only a few years in his adult life since 1978. The tax return you mentioned is a really interesting story. In 1984, Donald filed the New York State return and the New York City return. A New York State return is virtually identical to your federal return unless you're retired. On his Schedule C, that's what you do as a freelancer. It's what I use for my writing and lecturing and other stuff. He reported no income and over $600,000 in losses. His longtime tax guy, who's both a CPA and a lawyer, testified to something absolutely amazing. He said, that's my signature on the photocopy of the tax return, but I didn't prepare that tax return. Now, my first National Investigative Reporting Award more than 40 years ago was for exposing a crooked Michigan state legislator who put his name on somebody else's medical records. And it's not hard to do with modern photocopy machines where you can't tell. They were never able to find the original copy. The city government looked and looked, and they couldn't find it. Donald had no substantiation for his deductions. When you file your return, you don't have to have substantiation, but if you're audited, you got to produce invoices, checks, business records indicating you actually had these deductions. And I know you'll be shocked to hear the administrative law judges ruled that, well, you got to pay the taxes, and in one case, you got to pay a big penalty, 35%. In the other, the judge waived the penalty only because nobody could find the original return. And the logical conclusion to draw from this is, they never filed an original return. They filed the photocopy where somebody put Jack Mitnick's signature on it, even though he didn't prepare it. And the only person who would benefit from that would be Donald Trump.
Hmm.
And if that's true, that's a crime.
Okay, I was going to say, why is this important, David?
Yeah, if it's true, it would be a crime. And Donald has been very successful throughout his career in limiting investigations into his background. I mean, he brags in The Art of the Deal about how the New Jersey Attorney General's Division of Gaming Enforcement limited its investigation to his background. Now, they were so tough regulating people in New Jersey casinos that a young woman who applied for a license to be a blackjack dealer, that's a very low-level license, not an owner's license, She was found morally unfit because she had not disclosed that as a teenager she had given unauthorized discounts to her friends at the cash register at a store she worked at. Donald did not reveal 4 separate federal investigations, 2 of which he was the target of grand juries. Now, no charges arose, but you're required to disclose these investigations. They licensed him anyway.
Well, you mentioned lawsuits, and a USA Today analysis found that Donald Trump has had more lawsuits filed against him than any presidential candidate ever, 3,500 legal actions in federal and state courts over the past 3 decades, skirmishes, like you said, with casino employees to million-dollar real estate lawsuits, personal defamation lawsuits. What stands out for you?
Well, Donald has a very long history of not paying people. When he was finishing the Trump Taj Mahal, there were vendors all over Atlantic City, and I wrote about them at the time, who were not being paid, even though Donald went around telling people he was worth $3 billion or $5 billion or whatever number was in his head at the moment. And many of those businesses didn't survive. Many of them were barely profitable for years to follow. And yet Donald, in the bankruptcy, got more money out of the operation while all these people were stiffed. Donald's defense of that is very clear. He said publicly, repeatedly, I have made strategic use of the, that's my word, strategic, not his. I've used the bankruptcy laws. There's nothing wrong with that. Being sued that often, that's extraordinary. I mean, given the work that I do, I've been sued twice in my life, once by a lawyer I described as incompetent, who in the lawsuit couldn't spell my name right, couldn't correctly name the Los Angeles Times, couldn't correctly name spell the name of the young man whose murder case he mishandled. And once by somebody whose lawyer told me after he died that he said to him, there's no case here, but you know, I'm angry at him, go sue him anyway. Lots of people go through business. They're never sued, or they're sued minimally. Over 4,000 lawsuits. That should tell people something about Donald's business practices. Most businesses behave generally in an ethical fashion. But that is not the pattern of Donald's conduct.
And we're talking about everyone from big-time contractors to servers, for example, at his Miami golf resort. Just last month, Trump Miami Resort Management settled with 48 servers at a golf resort over failing to pay overtime for a special event. Settlements averaged from $800 for each worker to as high as $3,000. So we're talking people who are servers to people who are contractors.
Right. Yeah, all over the place. Donald has a long history doing this. I've talked to people who did some freelance work for Donald. They present it to him. He tells them it's crap and garbage and he's not going to pay it, but he tells them to leave it. Then he uses it. Well, then you go to your lawyer and your lawyer says, well, how much was your fee? Well, it was $50,000. Well, it would cost you $250,000 in litigation costs to fight this. Just give it up. You're not going to win. And Donald knows this, and he does this all the time. I mean, remember, he boasted, I borrowed money knowing I wouldn't have to pay it all back. Are banks going to loan money to you if you say that? And in fact, Donald doesn't have loans now unless they are very well secured. You know, if you only owe 20% of the value of your house, it's 100% guaranteed repayment to the bank eventually because there's so much equity they can take to cover their losses. And that's how Donald borrows money these days. The loans he has are very low loan-to-value and very well secured.
How is he able to do this? Because the average person sure couldn't get away with this.
Well, in the crucial moment in his life occurred in 1990. Donald was unable to pay his bills as they came due. As a casino owner, the standard you had to meet was you had to prove, as the owner, by clear and convincing evidence that you were financially stable. And financial stability meant you could pay your bills as they came due. Donald wasn't paying his bills as they came due. His lawyers, or more than 1,000 lawyers involved in negotiating a deal to lend him more money and the banks to take discounts on the loans to get back less money than they were owed, because it would be even worse if there were an uncontrolled bankruptcy. And the New Jersey Casino Control Commission, as I've written about a number of times in the past, took Donald's side against his bankers. Politically, that makes sense. What is the governor of New Jersey, the most powerful governor in America under their state constitution, and his appointees, what do they care about bankers in New York and Germany and London compared to a major state employer, Donald Trump. But as a matter of law and ethics, it was atrocious, and he was too big to fail way before we had banks who were too big to fail.
David K. Johnston is a longtime investigative journalist. He has worked at the New York Times and many other publications. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump, will be out on August 2nd. David has been covering Trump for nearly 30 years, and we have a number of his articles at yourcallradio.org. What do you want to know about Donald Trump? He is getting 24/7 coverage. He's received $2 billion in free media over the last year. So what do you know about him, and what don't you know about Donald Trump? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, local public radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @yourcallradio. Coming up in a half hour, it's BBC's World Have Your Say here on KALW. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the Turkish government's intensified crackdown. According to reports, nearly 50,000 people have been rounded up, arrested, or fired in the wake of the attempted coup. We'll also talk about coverage of the Republican convention, the party's extreme platform, and the surveillance programs being used to track protesters. Next week in Philadelphia is the Democratic convention. We'll be talking about corporate sponsors next week, Hillary Clinton's foreign policy. We'll also talk about her record on women and girls and the state of democracy as the conventions come to a close at the end of next week. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. At tonight's convention in Cleveland, Donald Trump will officially accept the nomination. He will be running for President of the United States on the Republican ticket. So what do you want to know about Donald Trump? Today's guest, investigative journalist David K. Johnston, has covered Trump for almost 30 years. He's got so many in-depth pieces, and now he's out with a new book. It's out actually on August 2nd, The Making of Donald Trump. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a question for David, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us @yourcallradio. David, in the piece you wrote for the National Memo, 21 Questions for Donald Trump, your question number one was, you call yourself an ardent philanthropist but have not donated a dollar to the Donald J. Trump Foundation since 2006. You're not even the biggest donor to the foundation, having given about $3.7 million in the previous two decades, while businesses associated with the World Wrestling Entertainment gave the Trump Foundation $5 million. And Martha has a related question. What evidence is there that Trump has any history of charitable giving? Is there any evidence of advocacy of public policy for the common good? In short, any evidence of him doing anything for anyone other than himself or his own business interests?
No. And the short answer to that one is very easy. No. Donald has no record in public policy at all, and he doesn't know anything about public policy. In the case of his charitable giving, he was put on an allowance of $100,000 a year by his bankers years ago for charity, and I spent a day calling all sorts of nonprofits in New York and New Jersey, and I had, at the LA Times, created the first hard news beat covering nonprofits, and I had trained the Chronicle of Philanthropy news staff, so it's an area that I have a lot of knowledge, and I couldn't find any money at all that he'd given anywhere. He took, evidently, because we don't have his actual tax returns, but based on his public comments, he took a $26 million deduction for a conservation easement on his golf course in Palos Verdes. This is on land that cannot be developed because of the shifting earth, and it is used as the driving range for the golf course. By the way, he paid for the whole thing. He told people it was over $250 million investment. He paid $27 million for it. That's the kind of thing Donald does. And the record entirely shows that what giving is associated with him are things like free rounds of golf, photo ops with him. He had offered $1 million prize to somebody if they got a hole-in-one. Well, the guy got the hole-in-one, and then Donald wouldn't pay, and they finally settled that litigation by Donald making a charitable gift, but it was only because of the litigation.
All right. Well, thank you for that email, Martha. And let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Christine in Berkeley. Hi, Christine. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, and thanks for this whole theme is very important. I'm calling, this is a little bit of a digression from what you were discussing before, but he's had at least one rape allegation, and I'm kind of concerned that this isn't something that's getting a lot more media attention, but I'm also wondering, you know, what there is about that, and if there are any other rape allegations, and I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, thank you.
This is something I have not written about, but I'll tell you what the public record shows. There is a lawsuit against Donald involving a woman who was a minor at the time. Donald insists that it has no substance to it, and there apparently are no other witnesses. Donald did associate himself with some people who've had other issues raised about them, but I haven't seen any proof of this. Donald's wife, Ivana, in the divorce proceedings, described a violent sexual assault by her husband. However, she later said, "I did not mean to imply in using the word rape that this was criminal." What she had said is, "I felt violated," and she had hair torn out of her head. You know, you can read whatever you want into that. That's frankly not the kind of stuff I tend to get into. I tend to look at people's public policy content and their business activities.
I just found a story over at Huffington Post by Lisa Bloom, who's a legal analyst for NBC, and she's got a piece, "Why the New Child Rape Case Filed Against Donald Trump Should Not Be Ignored." And this woman, calling herself Jane Doe, is accusing Donald Trump of raping her in 1994 when she was 13 years old. And according to this piece, the media are ignoring it. She says the allegations are credible. And so I don't know much about this. We'll link to this at our website, yourcallradio.org. The Guardian has also covered this, so we'll also link to that. Thank you for calling in, Christine. Let's go next to Paul in Vallejo. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'll tell you what I find so scary, and particularly watching the convention coverage, much as I can stand it, is that person after person that's questioned about this, and in particular the women delegates, they don't seem to care about this. They don't. Everybody says, "All I want is Donald because he's a strong person." And facts are just don't get in the way of their support. And how this phenomena, is this reflected in other parts of his life?
Well, Paul, I think there's a very simple, clear explanation for that. And I find myself in a very odd position here about this. I've spent the last 20 years writing mostly about inequality, the tremendous these government programs nobody knew about that subtly take money from all of us and give it to super rich people, and discrimination against women in pay, and other inequality issues in wealth and income. The fact is, a large portion of the American public is really being battered by our economic rules. And just as Bernie Sanders tapped into that, so did Donald. And instead of people saying, "Well, how did this happen?" reading my books would explain it to them. What they see is a man who's offered them a simple explanation. "Well, it's the stupid leaders who don't know what they're doing in Washington. It's the Mexican government that's sending rapists here. It's the Chinese who are cheating us." And since they don't know any more about public policy than Donald does, this is very appealing. Now you add one more layer to this, and it's the key thing that probably separates the, I would describe as generally naive Bernie Sanders supporters from the generally naive Donald Trump supporters, and that's racism. Donald's campaign is absolutely based on racism. and explicitly so, and not about us as a society, but, you know, his vision of a society that, in his view, you know, should be white and Germanic like him. That, and so I think that's what you're seeing. People who are economically have been battered down and are not doing as well as they think they should, even if they're doing reasonably well, and Donald offers them a simple, easy explanation. That's what demagogues do.
David, I was going to ask you about this because I'm going to talk more about this on the Media Roundtable tomorrow. It feels like the media are really normalizing all of this. Rebecca Traister wrote about it for New York Magazine, The Ugly Truth About the RNC, Donald Trump is Not an Outlier. And she writes that Donald Trump's candidacy has allowed the other speakers to come out as inciters of sexist, racist, violent mob action and xenophobic fear-mongering. She says, what's more, by framing their hateful rhetoric in terms of patriotism, they're reminding us that much of the poison in this country runs deep. It's almost like the moderators are afraid to state the obvious. In some cases, the conservatives who oppose Donald Trump are the ones that are saying, this is so vitriolic and off the wall. I mean, the moderators aren't stating the obvious.
Because it's deemed not to be, you know, appropriate to do that. I mean, I've been on some TV and radio shows where a producer has sort of said, would you kind of moderate talking about this or that? Look, Ronald Reagan announced his campaign for the presidency in a little tiny place called Philadelphia, Mississippi. Now, there's only one famous event that ever occurred in Philadelphia, Mississippi. It was the murder of three civil rights workers who were tortured and burned and their bodies buried. And Ronald Reagan asserted, oh, I had no idea. Well, then why did you do your campaign there? Because it was a dog whistle signal to Southern racists that he was with them. And in the same way, Donald is there, but he's much more open about it. I mean, Mexico's sending their murderers and rapists here. I'm sure some of them are fine, but they're sending murderers and rapists here. And look, there are a lot of people in America, people who say they don't want to have political correctness. What they really mean is, I don't want to have to sit on an airplane seat next to a person who's black. I don't want to have to sit in a restaurant with someone who's Hispanic. I don't want to have my children go to school with someone who's a Muslim. And we need to be honest and deal with this. We need to talk about the fact that there are a lot of people in America who really want to have a white European America, but they also know that it's not acceptable to talk about it in public. And we need to have a conversation about it and be candid about it. And we've seen a lot of that come forward because of the presidency of Barack Obama. Remember when Fox News told us, the guy is so dumb he has to read off a teleprompter.
Right. Well, and this translates to policy, though, and that's the other thing that isn't getting much attention. I mean, we talked a little bit about Mike Pence, but this the Republican Party's platform is more extreme than any platform in history. The New York Times had a really good piece about Mike Pence and his extreme abortion views, so extreme that anti-choice politicians in Indiana would not sign on to the bill that he signed this March, prohibiting women from obtaining an abortion because of the race, the gender, or disability of the fetus, making Indiana only the second state in the nation to do this. And again, this is the man who's running for vice president on the Republican ticket.
Right. Well, and he's the one who's giving comfort to a lot of evangelicals. And go back to my column at Investopedia today, and it'll be up at the Daily Beast either tonight or tomorrow, is exactly about this. I mean, I go through the Bible to show Pence's behavior and how it does not comport with his professed Christianity. And there's a larger issue here. An amazingly small number of Americans get religious training anymore. My students... they have to learn some biblical law because I teach the law of the ancient world, the business regulation of the ancient world and the property and tax law of the ancient world. And many of them, they know nothing about what's in the Bible. Whereas when I was a kid, and I'm 67 years old, my parents, atheists, said, you will go to Sunday school. You'll go to the Presbyterians, the Methodists, the Lutherans, the Catholics. You're going to go all over the place. You're going to go to a Jewish temple and go to school with those kids because they said if you're going to live in this country, you have to have a deep understanding of religion. we have people who go around saying that they are believers of the word, and yet they violate the most basic fundamental tenets taught by Jesus Christ and found in the Old Testament as well. And nobody calls them on it. And when you try to do that, I mean, I have people write me saying, who are you to question what they say is their faith? Well, I'm a reasonably intelligent human being who can compare behavior to action.
David K. Johnston is author of the forthcoming book, The Making of Donald Trump. It'll be out on August 2nd. David has covered Trump for nearly 30 years. And if you have any questions about Donald Trump, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's go next to Roseanne in El Cerrito. Or is it Ruthann?
Ruthann.
Hi, Ruthann.
I was wondering, this is not a rhetorical question, I honestly don't know. Does the FCC have any jurisdiction if Donald has said incorrect things over airwaves that it regulates or print media or any of the outlets that the FCC has jurisdiction over?
Ruthann, that's a great question. I'm really glad you brought that up. First of all, there's no jurisdiction over cable. Cable can do whatever it wants. The public airwaves are licensed to KALW and everybody else who has a broadcast license in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. We used to have rules about fairness that required you to provide not maybe all sides, but multiple sides to an issue, and that held you accountable for some degree of accuracy. Those rules were repealed. The Democrats went along with the Republicans and repealed those rules. And as a result, I hope my obituary someday, which I hope is in the distant future, will point out that I'm the only journalist in American history who caused a broadcaster to lose its license for violating those rules through news blackouts and manipulations. But basically, the reality is, no, you can lie and deny all you want, and there's no government effect on that. I fault there the journalism organizations, not so much the government rules. You see a lot of fact checking in PolitiFact and the Washington Post fact checker column, but you hear relatively little of it on television. And as Saturday Night Live likes to point out, they tell unbelievable whoppers on Fox, and then they make one little disclaimer somewhere on one show not very many people watch and say, we corrected the record.
Well, thank you for the call, Ruthann. Let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Rose. I'm thinking that you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
All right, good. Well, I think it's more simple that all right, so David, I'm in San Francisco, a different guy, but I'm voting for Clinton, but I can get where the voters for Donald Trump would see this all very easily, that Donald Trump is a success. He got through these 3,500 lawsuits. He came out smelling like a rose. Mm-hmm. He's an artist. And it doesn't matter about all the details of his background and his hellish action. He succeeded. And we want to go with the winner. We want to go with a good con artist. He's shown himself to be successful. That's who we want for our United States, to blow smoke up everybody's ass all around the world. That's what his voters are thinking about, and they don't care about all these details. It's way too complicated.
David, I think you're quite right about that, and I think that one of the tragedies is that people are not paying attention to their duties as citizens. The founders actually wrote a great deal about their concerns about this. One of the arguments that some of the founders made about why they believed you should have to own property in order to vote, you had to be a landowner to vote in the early days of this republic, was they felt that people who simply worked for wages would have no understanding of how the world works and they would be manipulated. And I can look around today and say, boy, that's perhaps reasonable. You have people who say, I pay no attention to the news. And so they don't know anything, and it makes them completely vulnerable to the image that Donald Trump has sold, which has very little to do with the reality.
And again, it's the power of the narrative, right? Make America great again.
And he's masterful at this. I mean, I recognize and have since I first met him. Donald is a great salesman. I mean, he will sell you the sizzle for a steak that isn't there at all. He will get you to come back and buy it again. And except for people who he's really pretty heavily vanquished, he has lots of people who are believers in him. And, you know, Martin Luther King in his most famous speech said that he wanted his four children to be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Donald represents how in America today we often judge people by the presumed content of their wallet. I don't see the connection between having money and being a good leader, but I certainly see a connection between character and leadership.
And what about the media just repeating this simplicity? Anne in Berkeley writes, this has more to do with the media than with Trump. It's mysterious to me why more of the media have not reported on his history in the world of business. She cites the report about the 3,000-plus lawsuits that were brought against him. Why hasn't this reporting been more widespread, she asks.
Well, a couple of things here. As I mentioned earlier, newsrooms don't have anywhere near the budgets they used to have. The total revenues of the New York Times, when you adjust for inflation right now, are about a third of what they were when I was hired there 20 years ago. And so newsroom budgets have shrunk. And investigative reporting is really expensive. It is really expensive. When I was at the Los Angeles Times, for a single paragraph of an investigation I did, the paper spent $10,000. You would have a tough time today getting $10,000 to do a whole story. So the shrunken staff, the lack of money, Donald's continual threats of litigation, which means you'll have to spend money you want to spend in the newsroom, you know, dealing with a lawsuit from him. And then the fact is that many reporters basically do a very good job of accurately quoting what people say, but they don't understand the underlying systems, how they work. They don't know where to go get public records. They don't know how to analyze them if they do. I mean, the number of business reporters who don't really know how to read a balance sheet. You can hand them a, you know, the company made this much profit and they can write a simple story. But if you then start asking about the footnotes and the accounting rules, hardly any of them ever studied accounting. I keep accounting books in my office because it's so important, but I'm an oddball. You know, there's me and Floyd Norris and Gretchen Morgenson at the New York Times and maybe five other people around the country who do this, and everybody else, they just take the press release.
Well, we still believe in information here. And David, we have a couple minutes left. From the other articles that you've written about, the $250 million tax scam, the dumping sewage into the Hudson River, there's the Trump University lawsuits. What else stands out for you? What should we know about?
Well, let me talk about the $250 million tax scam. Donald is not accused as a defendant in that, nor are his children. They are currently described as material witnesses. Donald, for a long time, traveled with a fellow who was a violent convicted felon. He took the stem end of a broken margarita glass and smashed it into a guy's face. This guy ran a $40 million stock swindle together with the Genovese and Gambino crime families that cheated a lot of old people out of their money. And then he was allowed to secretly plead in federal court because he turned himself into an asset of the CIA supposedly for, I mean, Loretta Lynch, the U.S. attorney, says he helped intercept missiles on their way to terrorists. He is accused in this lawsuit of cheating on $250 million of taxes. He says he did nothing wrong. You know, time will tell about this, but it is indicative of the many questions we should be asking about who Donald associates with. Now, simply associating with someone is not grounds to criticize them. I've had a mafia hitman in my house. So that's not the grounds. But when you do business with people and when you're then sued for civil fraud and it turns out that, you know, you did what's called a classic bait and switch. You sold people on this and that wasn't what they were getting at all. Then you should be raising questions about that, particularly with someone who would have his finger on the nuclear button.
Mm. Well, what else should we know about Donald Trump as we enter, what is it, 4 months until the election, and it's going to be nonstop coverage, debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
Well, let me give you my self-interested answer to that. I don't know if we're going to see any debates between them, but trust me that if you read my book, and it's a fast read, if you read my book, it will lay out to you not everything in the world about him. It will tell you, though, about the things that I think are relevant to how he got where he is, who he is, and what he is, and connect the dots. And that's one of the big things we have been doing, is connecting the dots and showing how this relates to that about Donald. Donald has done a masterful job of creating an image. I mean, he's a household name. Here's a guy who grows up in wealthy in Queens, and he wants to be a household name, and he's made himself mm-hmm. one. So he's accomplished that, but then you have to look beyond what he's selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know the Fiji Mermaid was a fake, you're going to get taken here.
You don't think that we're going to have debates between Trump and Hillary Clinton?
Well, if I were Donald, I would not want to debate her. No.
Oh.
She's a lawyer. She's a skilled, whether you like her or hate her, Hillary Clinton is a serious, very smart person, and she's done lots of debates, and she's very effective. If she debates him, if he debates her, if she ever sinks to his level, if he gets under her skin, she's in deep trouble with the voters.
Wow.
Her whole campaign has been, I'm taking the high road here. And that's the risk for her. But I will not be surprised if there are no debates.
Wow. David, I don't like asking these kinds of questions because you don't know the answer. But if Donald hadn't gotten this 24/7 media coverage, mostly uncritical in the last year, do you think we'd be here today?
We might be. I mean, I was the first national journalist the day he announced who started saying he might get the nomination. That's because the party rules are out of touch with the times. We really need to have some fundamental reform. We've set up political systems in both parties that are aimed at the interests of the donor class, not at the general voter. And even without all that coverage, I think he might have picked off a lot of these guys. And remember, some of them were real empty suits. And it became very quickly clear, Ben Carson, for example, that he didn't know anything like Donald. But Donald has this – he has some charisma. He knows how to market. He knows how to reduce things in a simple way to people. And he's a master salesman.
Well, we're getting a lot of emails about the allegations of rape. And a brand new article just broke in The Guardian. Jill Harth is the woman who sued Donald Trump over alleged sexual abuse in 1997. She's broken her silence, and she's saying, don't call me a liar. And we'll put a link to that at yourcallradio.org. And Greg, thank you for that email. David, thank you so much for your reporting. And I know we're going to have you back over the next couple of months.
Good. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, David. David K. Johnston is author of the forthcoming book, The Making of Donald Trump. It'll be out on August 2nd. Be sure to check out all of David's reporting on Donald Trump at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the Turkish government's intensified crackdown on the media, state institutions, and education system. According to reports, nearly 50,000 people have been rounded up, arrested, or fired. We'll also discuss coverage of the Republican convention, the party's extreme platform, and the surveillance programs being used to track protesters. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.